This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer. Once again, I am very excited to be here for a super cool show. Who among us, because we talk about solving problems all the time, has not wanted to solve crimes? Well, our guest today is helping do just that.
Well, what's the question? What's the problem that she's going to solve?
How can science help you solve crimes?
How can science help us solve crimes? Oh, I bet there's chemistry. Please tell me there's chemistry.
I will definitely tell you there's chemistry. Today we have Dr. Kelly Elkins with us, and she, get ready, Jennifer, is a forensic chemist, as well as an educator and an author.
Oh, this is so awesome. Welcome to the show, Dr. Kelly.
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Jennifer. Wow, thanks. Thanks for having me. You got it right.
So this is fabulous. So what does a forensic chemist do? I beat you to that, Jeff.
You did. I was going to ask.
So forensic chemists analyze evidence that's submitted to crime labs or that's submitted in relation to any kind of violation of law or suspected violation of law. So forensic chemist is a generic term. And for someone who works in a crime lab, we call them a criminalist, which is a special type of forensic scientist that applies science to solve cases under criminal law.
Oh, okay. So that makes sense that your question that you're helping us solve today is how can science help us solve crimes?
Yes, it sure can.
So what parts of chemistry, because we've had other chemists on the show, what parts of chemistry have you studied to help you with forensic chemistry?
I was trained as a biochemist, so I focused on proteins and DNA. And more often than not now, I use DNA to help solve crimes or help solve cases. In the academic world where I spend most of my time, we are working on historical cases or simulated evidence to help figure out the protocols and procedures that crime labs might use and may work for them. So my focus is DNA, but I've also worked in forensic chemistry, and we apply all sorts of chemical instrumentation and procedures to analyze evidence such as body fluids like blood or fibers from your shirt, footprints, fingerprints, tire tracks, broken glass, and so forth. Basically, anything that you can envision that could be evidence has been evidence.
Okay.
Oh.
As you were saying all of that, my mind immediately went to, I feel like I'm listening to a police show on television, but you're really doing it. So I guess how I want to word this question is, since you are really doing that science, how close is TV getting to what it is that you're doing with forensic chemistry in terms of matching up like fluids and fibers with real criminals to help solve cases?
Well, TV gets some things right. There is evidence involved.
Okay. There is evidence. All right.
Yeah. There are nice labs and there is nice instrumentation.
Okay.
I wish things were as fast as TV.
Okay. I was going to ask that. Yeah, because usually they look at something and they're like, oh, it's this. Boom. So
right.
It doesn't happen
like that.
No, the fastest DNA profiling methods are now about an hour and a half, but which is super fast.
Okay.
But that still won't fit in a TV episode. And more likely...
Right.
More likely, it will take a few days. And that's for an expedited case and longer if there's the backlog at the lab.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So let me follow that up with one. I'm sorry, Jennifer, I know I cut you off there. Let me follow that up with one. Being on the scientist side of that as a forensic chemist, how well are police officers doing, the officers and the detectives that are out there at crime scenes, like collecting that evidence? Or are you and like other scientists going out to do that as well?
So that's a great question, Jeff. Most police officers and law enforcement personnel strive to do their very best and are highly trained. Most people who go collect evidence at the crime scene nowadays, and of course it varies by region, it varies around the world, and I know your listeners are all over the world, but the people who collect the evidence are generally crime scene investigators or crime scene technicians.
Okay.
And those people actually have science degrees like ourselves.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So you might not think that they're highly, highly trained, but indeed you can find PhD microbiologists or PhD anthropologists out collecting evidence at the crime scene.
I mean, so also because we all know, as we've seen from TV, and we assume that that's true, is that everything, you need to collect samples that are not contaminated to get as clean as possible so that you can, because you're talking, when you are identifying fingerprints, sometimes you have to identify multiple sets, right? Or partials or all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely, right. So they need to be skilled in those procedures, and they need to take into account that those fingerprints are not only being used for fingerprint analysis, but they can also be used for DNA analysis. So the skin cells from your skin can actually be transferred into the fingerprint, and they can be used for touch DNA. So it's really important that they use unique single-use fingerprint brushes, for example, to not transfer DNA from a previous scene. And so they're highly trained, and they need to know the capabilities of the lab. They need to know what the lab can do. And like you said, Jennifer, they need to know how sensitive the lab can go so that they make sure that they're not introducing contamination that could be picked up by the lab.
I did not know that you could get skin cells off of fingerprints. Wow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For 20 years now, the scientists have been doing just that. And the techniques are more sensitive than ever.
Wow.
You can get a profile from a single cell.
Man, you know, I know I'm the one who introduced the television thing into the conversation, but now I need to translate this to books and movies. It sounds like, you know how the book is always better than the movie? Because there's so much more in a book. It sounds like the real science of forensics is way cooler than what's happening on TV, just because it's so much more detailed.
It is. I mean, scientists, if you've ever spent time in the lab, you'll know that scientists like our toys, and our toys are just as cool as the souped up cars and trucks you see on the road. They're sophisticated, they're sensitive, and they can do the most unbelievable analysis. And many of them cost as much as a house. And so we are really privileged to get to use these tools and really dive into that single cell level, those strands of DNA, and be able to analyze the DNA sequence and compare, you know, samples and look at how similar they are, how different, which families they came from, and so forth.
So can you take us through a little bit, like if you have a new crime scene or whatever, where do you start? Is there like a specific pattern that you start here and then you move here, or do you take what you get?
Sure. Yeah. When the investigators go to the crime scene, of course, law enforcement is there and has made sure it's safe and cordoned things off. And we'll typically have some direction for them of where to start, but they're going to take a larger kind of bird's eye view of the whole scene and then narrow in on those pieces of evidence that are of the most interest and will be potentially most significant for the case. So they'll start with photography, and then they'll collect the evidence, again, applying those procedures not to introduce contamination. And then they'll bring the evidence to the lab. And if it's in the middle of the night, because crimes, of course, don't happen in the middle of the afternoon,
yes,
then they'll deposit it in a unique locker or at a clerk that's on duty 24 hours. And then the lab personnel are typically separate from the criminal investigators. So they will retrieve the evidence and sign it out, and then they will do their analysis. And so crime lab analysts specialize to some extent. They'll have the same training. Typically, they have a similar training, but they'll specialize and qualify, say, in DNA or in trace evidence analysis. And that usually takes about 2 years to qualify after, after their education. And so if a ballistic specialist signs it out, they'll do their analysis. If a fingerprint analyst signs it out, they'll do their analysis. And so it proceeds through to the different facets of the crime lab and is analyzed. And then each of these people writes their report. And if the case goes to trial, they testify as well on the analysis that they perform.
Okay.
So these scientists are not the people that just stay in the lab. They actually have to come and, just like you all, come speak to the public and talk to everyday people who may or may not have a science background and explain what they did and what this means.
Yeah, I was going to ask about to go to court, because I've seen, you know, I my only experience is TV, but and actually one of my favorite shows was Bones. I don't know if you ever watched that show. But yeah, I mean, you would see the forensic scientists have to go to court and explain what they found and whatever, again, in language that everybody could understand. So that's why it's important to be a really good science communicator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just watched a great interview with that scientist this spring while we were all at home during the pandemic, and her foray into writing books and then into television. So that's a great story.
Oh, yeah.
Very cool. So just before we started our interview, we were talking about your degrees in chemistry. Both of your master's and your PhD came from my hometown, Clark University. Give them a shout out.
Shout out. Shout out to Clark.
Absolutely. Yay, Worcester, Mass. I was wondering, did you know, as soon as you got interested in chemistry, did you know that you wanted to do forensic chemistry right away? Or did that happen somewhere along the way?
Yeah, so I was talking to my kids today about this, and they were asking, well, why did you choose this field, Mom? And, and you know, I always liked science. I was a kid who liked science, and I liked to see how things work. And I also liked history, and I had planned to become a teacher. And so I've done those things. Right now I'm applying science to history cases, and I'm a college professor by day job. And so I didn't know, though, when I was a kid that I was going to major in chemistry. At that point, I was interested in biology, but quickly I realized that I preferred things that I can't see to things that I can see. And so I prefer microbes and things like DNA and proteins to, for example, animals and plants, which were just not as interesting. And my college professor said, well, you know, what you really need to study is chemistry then, because you're interested in the chemistry of the biology. And so that's what set me down the path to chemistry. And it was due to a need when I was teaching, they needed a faculty member to teach forensics. And so I moved into this space about 15 years ago now.
I mean, that's cool. So that shows kids, we like to show kids that you don't always have to just pick your career, which is, there's a lot of pressure, right? When you go into college or high school and or picking your path, but you can change, right? You
absolutely
can say, hey, I like this, so this is the direction I'm going to go. That's really cool.
Yeah, I love how I get to do chemistry, biology, everything every day. My professors always said I'd be very good at whatever I finally decided I was going to do. And so...
Way to prove them right.
Maybe I'm deciding, but I still have more interests I'm pursuing too. And I think that, you know, what I love most, of course, is getting to keep learning. And that's what I love most about my job, is that every day I get to learn something new. And then I get to talk to other people about it, which reinforces the thing that I just learned. And so that's a great opportunity. And I get to work with young people who have much more energy than I do. And I thrive from their energy and interest in what I'm doing.
Very cool. What you just said sort of spurred me into a question I don't think I've ever asked a guest before. We know your question is, how can science help solve crimes? But because you were just talking about continuously learning and you're still learning every day, how do you see forensics and forensic chemistry changing or progressing, say, in the next 10 or 20 years as our listener age kids start doing what you're doing?
Ooh, I love this question, Jeff. So I think that it's already changing in the last 10 years or so. So forensics is an applied field. Typically, the technology is developed outside of forensics, and then forensics applies it. And that's great, because when you're talking about real cases with real people's lives on the line, you want to make sure that the instrumentation and the methodology has been vetted and tried several times by several different groups before it's applied to those kind of cases. So one thing that I've gotten into and that is really on the forefront of forensics right now is what they call next generation sequencing or massively parallel sequencing. Oh. And so in these experiments, we not only sequence a single strand of DNA in a small aliquot of sample, we're actually sequencing millions of sequences and targets simultaneously. We can do 96 targets simultaneously and do thousands of reads of each of those in a parallel fashion. And so we're getting more and more data than ever before, which actually poses its own issues of data storage and management, but also training.
Okay.
People who have been working in this field for many years are used to what we call now the traditional method. And now they're being faced with this opportunity to apply this new technology if they get the equipment, if there's funding and training and so forth. The next generation sequencing, or NGS, we say NGS in the parlance, is really awesome because we're able to analyze more sites in the DNA than we were before. So for years, we've looked at only 13 sites or 16 sites or 24 sites in the DNA, and now we're looking at 231. And still that's small compared to the 3.2 billion bases. But we're looking, you know, so these sites range from about 100 to 400 bases each. So we're still looking at a very small percentage of the DNA. But in cases before where we could not differentiate identical twins, now we can, because we have a lot more data and we can see environmental changes and mutations as well that are occurring. And we can also use this because we're able to look at a lot more diversity of sites. This is really cool. It's really cool. If you were asleep, now you want to wake up. But we can tell, you know, we're working on some historical human remains that were uncovered by the Maryland Department of Highways and just making new roads, since we're such an old state and there are family graves that may not be marked. And so we can determine if the people were family members, and we can determine their ancestry. We can determine their sex.
No kidding.
And we can also determine their biogeographical ancestry and even things like their phenotype, what we call traits that are visible.
So like their hair color?
Like their hair color.
What?
And their eye color. And their skin tone.
The
all
bones?
From, all from the bones.
Oh, that's cool.
All from the bones.
That's science fiction.
Yeah.
That's science fiction.
Science fiction
has this is what you're doing now?
Life. This is absolutely what we're doing.
Okay, so let me go back, because of course I learned as a kid, and I've always thought that the DNA of identical twins is identical. Are you saying that it's you can now differentiate that?
We
can tell the difference?
Yes.
See, science changes, kids. This is my talk about why we do research. Right? When we write papers and so forth, because science changes. That is cool. And you heard it on our show, Solve It for Kids.
Absolutely. And it's why when you get done with school and college, you need to keep learning, because you learned as a 21-year-old may not be the same as when you're a 61-year-old. And if you want to stay marketable in today's world, you need to keep learning and keep on the forefront of these new technologies.
Oh, that's very cool. Very cool.
Wow. So my brain's going in so many different directions at what you just said on how many different markers you're looking at and separating DNA of twins. How much, and let me know if this is too big of a jump, do you have robots working in your labs that are helping you do some of this stuff as well?
Yeah, Jeff, they don't look like you. They're not dressed up and with a head on top, but we do have robots.
Okay.
We do have robots. We use our robots from everything from basically preparing samples, what we call sample preparation.
Okay.
So the robots are liquid handling devices, and it allows us to take human hands out of it, which couldn't introduce contamination. We use them to get the DNA out of the sample. So we use them routinely for that. But you can also use them to set up what we call the libraries that are used for the next generation sequencing. There's robotic tools for that. And the instruments are almost like robots too. Yeah. A lot of them have auto samplers. And so you can set up a number of samples and then go home for the night and hope that the tray didn't get stuck and the mechanics worked overnight when you come back in the morning.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. So when you used to create the samples before, you would clearly use gloves or something like that. Are you telling me that using those gloves could have introduced something into the sample?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's studies years ago that actually analyzed sources of contamination, and it's extremely rare, but there was some contamination detected and in a few samples, and they actually traced it back to the person packaging the gloves at a factory.
Oh my gosh, that makes total sense. So they're like fingerprints or something were on the gloves?
Yeah, so there's different shedder statuses. Different people can actually introduce more DNA, slough off more cells than others. And so this person was a high shedder and transferred that. Again, it's very rare. And this same thing could happen in the lab. And so we do multiple cleaning techniques before we use a space.
Right.
And we're very careful about putting on our gloves. But then we disinfect our gloves after we put them on. And so we're really careful about this. And we're routinely running control samples that don't have DNA in them. And they should not have a profile. And so if they do, then that gives us an indication that there was something wrong there with the reagents or the handling.
So if you find that, can you go backwards and eliminate it from the sample?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the DNA labs all collect samples, like DNA profiles from, say, your cheek cells for anybody who works in the lab, or even anybody who comes through for a tour of the lab. They'll take their profile. That way, if they end up in the case or in the samples, they can trace that back. So we call those elimination samples.
Oh, wow.
About problem solving.
Right? You've got to be a
problem solver. Right?
You guys are thinking of everything.
Well, again, I mean, this is somebody's life. So you want to make sure that if you're sending somebody to jail or convicting them, you got the science right.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's just amazing. I think this is so cool.
I think it's great. You think it's so cool. I do too.
Considering Jen studied chemistry, I had a feeling she was going to go a little geeky on this one.
Yeah.
So that's great.
My science was not that precise. So when I was working on my master's program and I had to create the auger plates, which do you guys, I don't even know if you use those anymore.
Yeah. Still plate bacteria. Absolutely.
Yeah. I had to create the initial plates with initial bacteria. Yeah. That would be 3 times before I finally got it right.
But that's okay. You got it right.
Yeah. My professor was kind of like, seriously? I mean, you follow the directions. Now, I will say this. I got it wrong the same way every time.
Right.
So I was being precise. I was being incorrect, but I was being precisely incorrect.
That's the absolute correct use of that term. Yes. Yeah. So sometimes it's good if you're working on very expensive protocols, which we've been using for our students in some of these next generation sequencing classes. So we teach this in regular classes. We have somebody read the directions and check, and we ask them. And then while they're actually transferring the reagents and the samples, because people make errors, and that's okay. You just want to be aware of where you can make an error and check for that. But if you're using very expensive tools, you want to make less errors.
Yes. Oh, yes.
From a guy who grew up that chemistry kind of was not my thing, like neither biology nor chemistry, even though I enjoy listening and love all the sciences, So my questions are kind of coming from a different area. I already asked about robots, but as the two of you have been talking about chemistry and DNA and how much more you're doing, is your world going to sort of bump into the virtual reality world that is continually emerging?
You know, in some ways it has, and I'm not probably going to answer your question well enough, but you can get another guest to answer this better. But already, you know, we employ military type technology, so technology coming out of developed for the defense industry that uses infrared cameras and X-ray technology to survey the ground and look for graves from the air. And we use technology as well at crime scenes that can take images, 3D images of the whole room and videos. Okay. So
your
it's not quite what you're
really
asking.
Really does bump into lots of technology.
It does. And the cool thing is we get to do it all. We get to do DNA. We get to do some chemistry. We can do a bit of geology. We can do some plant biology. You name it.
Okay.
We can fit it into forensics, right? So anything could be evidence that
could
be transferred at a
now.
Crime scene, right? So somebody could have picked up some soil or some pollen or some body fluid and then transfer that from them onto their clothing, and you're analyzing that in the case. And it's those connections that are used to solve cases. And so that's very famously that's cool. called Locard's exchange principle. Yeah. But it's this idea, right? This is this idea that every contact leaves a trace.
Yeah. That's really cool.
That,
I mean,
that's cool.
I mean, to me, I think this is just such cool science, and we could talk to you forever about this, but we like to ask our guests to give our listeners a challenge. So do you have a challenge for our listeners out there?
Yeah. So kids, I hope you've enjoyed this, and I want you to go and do a bit of chemistry. So one thing that you can do with things that you may have already at home is extract DNA from strawberries. And so we're going to post this on the website and instructions, and you can try that at home using soap, detergent, and your strawberries and so forth. And you should get some whitish looking gunk when you finish. Okay. And then for other kids who may have family members who have done some of the personal genetic genealogy DNA typing kits to learn more about their ancestry, their parents or siblings, go ask them to log into the site and go check out the data. So I want you to look at what loci did they look at, what were the results, what methods did they use to determine the results, what are they comparing? Look for the raw data if you can, and dig in as much as you can, dig as deep as you can to understand about the science and then about the analysis. And then ask your parents as many questions as you possibly can.
Well, this has been so much fun. I love talking chemistry, of course. Thank you for being on the Solve It for Kids podcast, Dr. Kelly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Kelly. I have learned a lot.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Jennifer.
Wasn't that a cool interview? And now, who doesn't want to get some strawberries from the grocery store and find out how we are going to pull DNA out of strawberries? I know I am, for one, going to be doing that.
Oh, absolutely. This is so cool. And for any of you out there whose parents have done the genealogy stuff, I mean, this is a really cool way to look into your backgrounds and understand how this works. And, you know, again, this
and
is
And look
this,
into what Dr. Kelly does.
Yeah,
that's exactly what she's doing.
This is chemistry. I mean, who doesn't like this? Anyway, don't forget to go to our website, solveitforkids.com. There is a full page dedicated to Dr. Kelly, so you can see, learn more about her, what she does. We'll probably even have a couple of videos about forensic science and maybe what forensic scientists do. Cool. And there's a book giveaway.
So, once you've done all that, don't forget to connect with us on our social media, at KidsSolve on Instagram and Facebook. And we will see you next time on Solve It for Kids.